Now, Brexit hit the headlines again this morning. Government official forecasts say Northern Ireland's economic growth could take a 12% hit if there is no deal between the UK and the EU post-Brexit. The forecasts model the 15-year impact of the UK staying in the single market, doing a trade deal with the EU, or leaving without a deal. Then, two DUP MPs caused anger after they called for the government to demonstrate a no-surrender attitude to EU bureaucrats.
Does the minister agree with me that it's about time the government demonstrated a no-surrender attitude to the EU bureaucrats who try to blackmail us, bully us over air flights, passenger duty and everything else? Stand up to the man, stand up to the EU, and let's get on with leaving the EU.
That was Ian Paisley speaking in the House of Commons yesterday. Phil Kelly is from the Northern Ireland Labour Party. Good morning to you, Phil.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning. The former DUP MLA, Nelson McCausland, with us today. Nelson, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, there's a passionate MP, Phil Kelly. You can't take that away from him.
Well, to my eyes, a buffoon. You know, he stood up in the House of Commons before and often just offers.
Hold on a minute. You can be slightly more respectful. And he's a, you know, he's got a mandate and he's an MP. So let's talk about what he said rather than...
Let's talk about what he said, which was absolutely nothing. He stood up and said no surrender attitude. He advocated Brexit in a region which, even before the referendum, those who looked at the situation logically were saying this will be devastating to our local economy. He stood up before in the House of Commons and talked about a royal yacht. Britannia will rule the waves. Maybe Ian Paisley Jr. would be better looking at his own constituency. Where's his no-surrender attitude when we lost Gallagher's and Michelin? Huge job losses in the Ballymena area. And he, you know, he talks...
Well, he campaigned and fought against that and raised it as a good MP should do. Well,
the problem is this, Stephen, because if we look at the recent Bombardier situation, and that will only be exacerbated in the coming years if we go through a no-deal Brexit situation. Let's remember what the British government's contribution was when those workers faced losing their jobs. They produced four pages. Your own journalists, you know, put, you know, Gavin Robinson on the spot when they showed the Canadian submission, which was, you know, really fighting to protect jobs, to protect that business, and the British government, who we will be relying on post-Brexit to look after this area economically, produced four pages, an afterthought.
Well, four pages would seem to be enough at the end of the day.
No, I think what was enough was trade union activity and make it a really strong case there. I think the British government really let those workers down.
Nelson?
Well, I think that, first of all, the issue as regards the figures that have been put out about the impact of Brexit on the various parts of the United Kingdom are interesting, and I think they deserve careful consideration rather than the sort of knockabout performance we've had there from Phil Kelly. He castigates Ian Paisley Jr. But the truth of the matter is that Ian Paisley Jr. is a very hardworking MP who works very effectively for his constituents. And I think that coming from a background that Mr. Kelly has of a party without representation, that it'll be hopesome to engage in that sort of personal abuse. I think the figures that emerged yesterday are over the last few days are interesting. However, here's the problem. We have not seen the background. We haven't seen the basis for them. We don't know how these figures were produced. And I would put this big caveat over all of this.
You're saying interesting. Is that a euphemism for worrying, concerning?
No. It's interesting, and I'll tell you why it's interesting. It's interesting that what we are seeing at the moment is a concerted campaign to try and reverse the referendum. Instead of respecting the referendum, there are too many people who are trying to reverse the referendum. And I'll give an example of what I mean by that.
Well, you can't blindly go in. These are official government figures.
No. Well, first of all,
you can't just put blindfolds on and think, well, a decision's been made a while ago. Let's not worry what any of the data is saying. No. Let's just charge ahead. No surrender.
First of all, as regards reversing the referendum as opposed to respecting the referendum, the point I would make there is that is something that's been going on for quite some time. Ever since the referendum took place, there have been people who have refused to accept the voice of the people, who have refused to accept the voice of the people of the United Kingdom, because it's a United Kingdom issue, not simply a Northern Ireland issue or a Scottish issue or English or Welsh issue. It's a United Kingdom issue, and we are part of the United Kingdom. I'd also say this about it. There's something here about past predictions that occurs to me. Before we had the referendum, George Osborne, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, was predicting everything from plague, pestilence, flood, fire, earthquake, and a monumental scale, all on day one. It was incredible the impact that this was going to have, even before Brexit took place. Simply as soon as the vote took place, if it went the wrong way, it would be a disaster. Now, George Osborne's predictions were blown apart subsequently. And I would make one other observation.
Well, Brexit hasn't happened yet, of course.
I know, but his predictions were about what would happen between the referendum and Brexit, as well as after Brexit. And he got it badly wrong. I was thinking also just...
Let's move on to the next point after Phil comes back to you.
There's a couple of issues there. One, this is the government's own analysis, okay? Not one single civil servant can, in all honesty, sign off on a report saying that hard Brexit is a viable option in the national interest. And what Brexit has done, it's exposed the sheer incompetence of government and the fact that their priorities are often personal ambition or personal greed. Now, what I would say is this, is look at John Redwood. Only this week, he was talking about bespoke World Trade Organization deals. He can't do that under the rules of the World Trade Organization. So John Redwood, a prominent MP, a prominent Brexiteer, doesn't understand the rules of the World Trade Organization. You had Greg Hands on the Daily Politics on the BBC this week, who was humiliated, didn't have a clue what the government position was. So you've got an incompetent Tory government who are trying to deliver one of the most complex changes in UK history of the last century. And they're not up to the job. And for people like Nelson McCausland, Ian Paisley Jr. to applaud the sheer incompetence of this government is deeply worrying. Because as I said before, there is not a single civil servant who's coming back with a report saying if we walk away from the EU with a no deal, that it's going to work out well. You've got companies like Nissan in the northeast, you've got BAE in the northwest, Bombardier here, who will be looking on with sheer panic at how this government is approaching these negotiations. And nowhere in the referendum did people vote for a hard Tory Brexit, which will turn the UK into an offshore tax haven and nothing more than a call centre.
Well, could I just say, Stephen, when I voted 40-odd years ago not to join the European Union, I knew what I was voting for then. When I voted this time to leave the European Union, I knew what I was doing. And it was something that I was determined to do because I wanted a proper break. A break is not a half break. Leaving meant leaving, and it was clear that people were talking about leaving the European Union.
Leave at any cost, I think.
No, that was a choice.
Is your position, correct?
I think Stephen, as a Democrat, you would accept, as I would.
Because it shows,
one at a time. Hold on, let's let Nelson finish.
I think as a Democrat, and I assume all of us will say we're Democrats, if that's the case that we're Democrats, then we should respect the referendum. The decision was made...
Well, you say respect the voice of the people, except you come from a party which uses petitions of concern to override Democratic majority votes.
Stephen, let's just stick to this issue.
Well, it would suit you too.
It would suit you indeed, Stephen, maybe to go over that issue because you've gone over it so many times before. It's one you always throw in. I think that you would say you would respect the referendum because you're a Democrat. I respect the referendum and I knew what I was voting for because it was made very clear before the referendum that if it voted to leave, then it would mean leaving the single market and every other aspect of the EU. Well, it was made very clear in the material that was sent out. It was made clear by David Cameron. People forget this, but those are the facts, whether you like them or not.
Sorry, it's not what senior Brexiteers were saying at the time. And also, Nelson, that quote that you said about the cost of leaving. That will haunt you, because people, if we face a no Brexit scenario.
Well, hold on, to be fair, let's not paraphrase what Nelson said. Let's actually hear what he said back in February of last year.
Are you telling me, Nelson, you told people to leave Europe without
people
knowing?
People knew very well what they were voting for.
No, without knowing whether there would be a soft or hard border.
People, I wouldn't care what sort of situation I face as long as I'm out of Europe.
Gosh. Oh, goodness. Doesn't matter how many jobs are lost. Doesn't matter how many jobs are lost.
Because the impositions of Europe, the intrusions of Europe have damaged Northern Ireland down through the years. We're free now. We're free.
So that's exactly what Nelson said.
Well, there we go.
Sorry, just
Nelson said, you know, earlier, as a Democrat, well, let's remember, if Brexit was about returning sovereignty to the UK Parliament, let's think about what the Tory government have done. They tried to take unprecedented power onto their books, and also they were dragged kicking and screaming to release the Brexit impact papers. That isn't the actions of someone who believes in the sovereignty of Parliament or a government that believes in parliamentary democracy. It's a power grab.
The issue at the moment is particularly around figures which have been leaked. Now, as to whether they're official figures, the government, I understand, has not formally accepted those. They are figures that have been put up to them, but have been criticised by the government. So to say they're official, I think, is a bit disingenuous.
It's a government report.
It's a report that's been presented to the government.
Stephen,
I understand it.
Stephen, there is no...
Hold on, let Nelson finish, Phil. Hold on.
But let me come back to this. The question of the success of experts in predicting in these things, I think, is pretty limited. There's a parallel here with what happened over the
Euro. I'm going to interrupt you, Nelson, just because I'm reading it in front of me here. This is Her Majesty Government's Treasury analysis. Mm-hmm. This is a Treasury document.
And did the Chancellor of the Exchequer before the referendum not rely on advice from the very same people? And he got it so badly wrong? Or was he ignoring what they said? Did they advise him?
No, but
did they give him the
but
sort
you
of...
you were diminishing the integrity of this report. It is a Treasury document.
Stephen.
Yeah, let's go back to the fact. Look at the example I was giving you there. If you look at the story of the euro and the pressure that there was for the United Kingdom to join the euro, we had every financial expert, every economist that there was, with the time the CBI was out there speaking, join the euro, join the euro, join the euro. Tony Blair was demanding it. Ken Clark was demanding it. And thankfully we didn't. And now I think people recognise it would have been the wrong thing to do.
So ignore the experts.
Well, I'm simply saying experts sometimes get it wrong. And I think that there is an uncertainty about a lot of this. The point was made by the Prime Minister there. We simply don't know what sort of deal will emerge from the current negotiations.
Well, we don't know.
It's impossible to make the sort of predictions that were being made.
Let me counter that, because, you know, Nelson raises an important point. And for your listeners, for us to be in tennis ball with experts, uncertainty is the key word there, because in the middle of a very difficult economic landscape, the Tory government, due to internal battles, decided to plunge the country into uncertainty through an unnecessary referendum. But let's deal in fact, Nelson, because yesterday Theresa May, if you want to know what Brexit is all about, you need to listen to what Theresa May said in the House of Commons yesterday, or didn't say. She was asked a direct question about the future of the NHS. Would the NHS be up for sale in an American trade deal, because that's what the American lobbyists want most. They want access to our National Health Service to fully privatise it, and she didn't answer the question. She didn't assure the House of Commons that the NHS would not be part of the menu for a trade deal with the United States of America. And for every one of your listeners sitting at home, think about what that means. That's what Brexit means.
That's the sort of scare tactics that are being put around by people who refuse to accept the democratic decision that was made in the referendum. So it's him to reverse it. We have all the sorts of, we have the billionaires of the world like George Soros putting their money into campaigns to undo the referendum. We have all sorts of people trying to undo the decision of the people of the United Kingdom and reverse the referendum. I say that we should respect the referendum.
Nelson, sorry,
the people made the right choice.
Nelson, let's not go into dog whistle politics, because a lot of the stuff...
Dog whistle? I don't whistle, I wouldn't call the dog.
A lot of that comes from propaganda from a very right-wing government in Hungary, so let's not go there. What I'm saying...
Sorry, let me tell you, answer the question. Is it not the case that there are extremely wealthy people, such as George Soros, putting significant amounts of money into the Best for Britain campaign? Is that true or not?
Let's not talk
is
about...
Is it true or not?
Let's talk about this.
Let's answer the question, please, Phil. Is that true or not?
Nelson.
You won't even answer. How much point in talking to somebody who will answer the question?
Jacob Rees-Mogg, a leading Brexiteer, has a huge investment fund in Somerset Capital, which is set to make billions out of emerging economies. So it's in his interest that we put up barriers with the EU, because then we're forced to sign trade deals with the kind of countries where he'll make personal gain. Now, I do recall, I don't know much about Soros, but what I do know was there was an intriguing story around dark money and the DUP and the Brexit referendum. So if you want to get into that area, perhaps there should be a show dedicated to the people who influenced Brexit on both sides. Who were they?
Phil, all Phil Kelly is doing is attacking the integrity of everybody from the NPSC Junior to Jacob Rees-Mogg to everybody that he can think of who he sees as being on the right because he's at the left. The truth of the matter
is... And, of course, you're attacking the integrity of the official government statistics, aren't you?
Well, there's a difference between attacking a person's personal integrity and attacking the validity.
To be fair...
Not the integrity of...
To be fair to Nelson McCausland, I think... Some of you may find the following statistics at least interesting, because the Treasury also did put out predictions of what the impact of a Brexit vote would be. And they did this before the referendum. So this was the impact of a Brexit vote, not the impact of Brexit. And they predicted some of the following is what this document, when it was put out then, predicted. It said that a vote to leave would represent an immediate and profound shock to our economy, said that that shock would push our economy into a recession, said it would lead to an increase in unemployment of about 500,000 GDP, would be 3.6% smaller. Let's walk through the actual reality then. So when they said that GDP would be 3.6% smaller after the Brexit vote, what has actually happened? GDP then was 479,693. It's actually gone down to 493,158. So nowhere even close to what the official Treasury predictions said. They said real wages was 101.5, latest figures, 101.2. So what am I trying to say? Unemployment, when they said would go down, there would be an increase in unemployment of around 500,000. Actually, unemployment then was 4.9%. It's fallen. Not only did the Treasury report get it wrong, it got it wrong so significantly that actually, rather than an increase in unemployment, more jobs have been created. Does that not support Nelson's point that if you, Phil Kelly, read into these statistics too much, you might be getting it wrong?
I totally agree that economists should not be treated as scientists. And I totally agree that in the lead-up to the referendum, on both sides, there were ridiculous analysis done and presented as fact. You know, this is what will happen. We shouldn't engage in that. I totally agree in that. What I am saying is that there are profound... You know, you look at it logically, and there's profound losses for our society. Northern Ireland voted against Brexit, and that's for very good reasons, because we live with the reality of a border, and we could see the long-term effect. Communities were wise enough to see that. And if you look at every border constituency in Northern Ireland, they voted against Brexit. But you're talking there about unemployment. This Tory government's got an imaginative approach to employment, and we don't need to go into that. But what I would say is we're struggling to recruit nurses and doctors that we need to work in our NHS. There's a huge, problem with recruitment.
Okay.
And it's been exacerbated by needless approach to Brexit.
We have lots of callers want to speak to us this morning. Can I ask this, Nelson McCausland? Yeah. Do you think it's helpful, people like Ian Paisley, using the no surrender language? And Sammy Wilson too?
It is a well-known phrase, I think, here in Northern Ireland, and I think it indicates...
Well-known because what? Because of what?
It's do we not expect sometimes a little bit of colour from our MPs? They're often presented as grey and dull and boring, so let's have a little bit of colour. There's a colourfulness about that. Could I just make one point here, Stephen, and I do have to leave at this point.
So if Republican politicians were shouting Chucky or La, what would you say?
I think there's somewhat of a difference between the statement made by Ian PSD Jr. and those who were advocating that they would achieve their ends by one of the bloodiest terrorist campaigns that Europe has known.
I think our local
difference there. Could I just make this point, Stephen, because I have to leave?
Yeah, of course.
Sorry. One of the things that was coming across there from Phil Kelly was that the constant reference to the right, to people on the right of the political spectrum and attacks of the Tories and so on. The left, and he belongs to a small political party, a very small political party on the left, here in Northern Ireland even, the left was deeply, deeply divided about this. And there were some socialist and even Marxist groups advocating leave, and some were advocating for it. They were all over the place as well.
He was actually not just simply
criticising people on the right. There were people on his own side of the political spectrum that took a very, very different view.
Okay.
Can I answer that?
Well, let me bring in some callers this morning. Here's Brian in Lambeg. Morning, Brian.
Morning, Stephen. How are you?
I've got a couple
of points to make, so if you give me some space to do so. You give the statistics out about what happened immediately after the referendum, but you didn't add the caveat that Mark Carney, the chairman of the Bank of England, the very next day started putting measures in place to reduce any chance of an impact on our economy because of the referendum. Secondly...
Well, I don't see your point about that, because, of course, the Treasury predictions would have been built on the fact that the Bank of England would have tried, and Mark Carney would have tried, to reduce any damaging impact as much as they could. They're hardly, you know, those predictions are hardly made just in the sake of a free-for-all after the vote. So it's irrelevant.
We don't know what's going to happen until we actually leave. But Carney has stood up and give a lecture. He gave a lecture last week, the week before, on this matter. And as for us jumping over the edge because some experts might get it wrong, is that worth risking our economy? You know, Nelson also talked about listening to the democratic vote, the vote of the people. Well, was the referendum actually democratic? Because nobody in England, Scotland, or Wales can outvote the Englishman. So it's not a democratic vote. And the will of the people just so happens to be that only 22% of the whole United Kingdom voted to leave. That means 78% didn't vote to leave.
The predictions, by the way, I don't think I've read these out. We've got into such a hullabaloo this morning. The predictions, and this is in terms of growth, the prediction is that Northern Ireland would see a 12% slowdown in growth if there is no deal. An 8% slowdown in free trade. If there's no free trade, 2.5% down single market. Okay.
Well, did you see the BBC commentary from Brussels last night saying that no vote is going to be something close to 12%?
Remember, it's a reduction in growth. Here's Fred in Lisburn. Morning, Fred.
Stephen, good morning, everybody. I watched the campaign with interest. Both sides were wrong. Labour have put up no actual argument of what they would change or what they would do. And their leader, Jeremy Corbyn, has sat on the fence numerous times throughout the whole campaign. The only one in the Labour Party that took a stand was Sadiq Khan when he stood beside David Cameron, arguing to remain. David Cameron has since turned around and said, hang on a minute, it's not as bad as we thought it would be. So we do not know what's going to happen until the negotiations are complete. The British government and the EU government negotiating teams have to go in hard at the start. They go in hard, and like the first round, they will come to an agreement. That's my belief, and I think it will happen, that they will come. But I would be very interested to hear what Labour would change. How would Labour do it? Would they just roll over and let EU scratch their tummies and, oh, poor wee UK, let them go? We fought for the jobs in Bombardier. It was a great decision. It was a decision nobody expected that we would win it. It just shows that, yes, we can compete with the rest of the world. Yes, there's trade agreements out there to be had. Yes, we want a trade agreement with the EU. There is major companies investing in the EU, such as BMW, who bought over Land Rover and companies like that, Jaguar. So we need these deals with everybody.
Okay.
We will work with people.
Fred,
we will work with us.